Hello and welcome to the newest edition of the Roughing the Kicker Chiefs podcast on Blog Talk Radio and ArrowheadAddict.com. I'm your host, Joshua Briscoe, and on today's show, we're finally breaking out the foggiest crystal ball in Kansas City, predicting the Chiefs' 2016 record game by game. Plus, ranking the AFC West, looking at Pro Football Focus's assessment of the Chiefs' roster, and ranking that within the NFL, which is what they do. We're going to look at their mindset through that ranking, which I think is very, very interesting. Plus, there have been two major contract developments impacting two of the Chiefs' divisional rivals. One of them is going to be a hefty, hefty price tag for the Denver Broncos. One of them is already a pretty large check coming from the San Diego Chargers. We'll talk about all of that at the end of the show. But most importantly, you don't even have to watch games this year, I'm pretty confident. You can just listen to this podcast, check off the wins and losses. If you want to even go ahead and make long-term future into the season bets on the Chiefs, you should be able to do that with 100% confidence now, because I haven't gotten an NFL game wrong since the Super Bowl. This is not going to be my last Chiefs 2016 schedule prediction, I'm sure of it, but it is the first one, though. Before training camp, after the NFL draft, starting to get a little bit of settling among the rosters in the division, and we're just focusing on the division here today. The Broncos quarterback situation, I think, is the most volatile thing left in the AFC West. But even with that still extremely up in the air, I think now is a good time to throw the first dart at how this AFC West pans out. I think the thing here that's going to benefit the Chiefs the most, that I will explain as I get to the games where it shows up, there are several situations where there's a strange quirk in the schedule that the Chiefs are going to be playing through here that distinctly benefits the Chiefs. Against divisional rivals in not must-win games necessarily, we won't know till we get there, but in games that can swing the balance of power in the AFC West, the Chiefs need to be able to exploit these, not loopholes, but just these little quirks that are going to be popping up as they go through the season. Chiefs exploit these things, they're going to win the AFC West. And I think by the end of it here, you're going to feel pretty good about it also. Let's start with at the top, and we're going to work our way through here. Opening up, the Chiefs play at home against the Chargers. They're 7-point favorites in this game as of right now. Also interesting, something that I wouldn't have predicted before the schedule first came out, but as I go through these games, it all makes sense. The Chiefs are underdogs in 4 games this season, as lines currently set. There are 3 pick-ems currently where neither team is favored. It's simply a pick-em game. And then in Week 17, there's no line currently because no one knows what Week 17 in the NFL is going to look like. That is a game in San Diego, though, for what it's worth. So Week 1, kicking it off in Arrowhead against the Chargers, 7-point favorites. I think the Chiefs take that game pretty easily. I think we're all going to fall into a trap, myself included, as you'll hear here. We're going to fall into a trap of underestimating the Chargers a little bit because of how devastated they were by injuries last year and a lot of struggles they had on both sides of the ball. Ultimately, they're going to bounce back a little bit, but I'm not too worried about opening day, I suppose, in Kansas City. Then Week 2, going to Houston. It's one of the pick 'em games lined up. The Chiefs have had awfully good luck in Houston, at least last season, winning at the beginning of the season and their last win of the season in the playoffs. I think Brock Osweiler going to try to solidify the quarterback position in Houston is very interesting. We know their defense is fantastic. They've got some wonderful weapons. DeAndre Hopkins is the most notable one. Chiefs have stopped this team before with worse quarterback play than Brock Osweiler. The Chiefs have also stood up pretty well against Brock Osweiler before, and I'm not terrified of Brock Osweiler. I think the Chiefs go to Houston and win this game. This is not one of these huge quirks, but just catching Osweiler early on in the Houston Texans experiment, I think, is a good thing. I'm not terrified of what he'll do long term, and I don't think any Colts fan should be terribly mortified either. But to be able to get in before they start to settle down, think of the complexities that Andy Reid and Alex Smith have gone through, to the point where we're starting to talk about Alex Smith calling audibles more consistently right now. Week 2 in Houston, Brock Osweiler is going to be severely limited. Give the Chiefs 2 wins to start the season. The next, come back to Arrowhead. Week 3, the New York Jets at home. Chiefs currently 3.5-point favorites in that. This is another situation where the quarterbacks are completely up in the air. Right now, I think Geno Smith is the guy on the roster most likely to be starting that football game. Ryan Fitzpatrick, that contract is still a mess, and he is still a free agent who will end up, in my opinion, in New York. I think it will be Fitzpatrick playing this game, but I don't think it's going to matter. Chiefs handle business at home. Start 3-0. Next game, they're 4-point underdogs, Week 4 in Pittsburgh. This is one of a couple of games on this list where you just take the loss. I'm not saying the Chiefs don't put up a fight in this game. The 4-point line seems to me like giving the Chiefs a nice benefit of the doubt of saying this team is going to be able to step up in a very difficult atmosphere against a very, very talented team. Once again, the Steelers went through some serious injury issues last year, and still you were able to see the type of immense talent they have around Ben Roethlisberger, Roethlisberger stays up, Le'Veon Bell sticks around. I don't see how this Chiefs defense, although I do believe in it, without Justin Houston, I don't think they're going to be able to get to Roethlisberger consistently enough to also hold down the running game with Le'Veon Bell to keep Antonio Brown from getting the ball. I see the Pittsburgh offense being too much here. Chiefs drop their first game of the year to go to 3-1 after 4 weeks. Week 5 is one of these interesting things. It's the bye week in week 5 for the Chiefs, which, if you're really bad at math, 4 weeks to start the year, 4 games to start the year, then a week off, then you got 12 straight games back-to-back-to-back-to-back all the way through the rest of the season. I don't think any NFL team likes a bye week that early. It's what the Chiefs have been dealt with. What it does is it sets the Chiefs up very well for their next game. Andy Reid has always been very good off of the bye, and in this case, it's one of these situations where the schedule plays very well in the Chiefs' favor. That next game is at Oakland. It's currently a pick 'em. You might be able to convince me that the Chiefs coming off of a bye week almost offsets the home field advantage that Oakland has. Oakland also, the week before, week 5, is playing a home game against San Diego, so it's a divisional game, two divisional games in a row. The week before that, they're in Baltimore. That's a tough 3-game stretch for the Raiders, even though we collectively don't think very highly of the Chargers. It's an interesting break in the schedule. As I went through, I did a bad thing as I was writing down my predictions for this year. I left that game blank until the very, very end. That was the last game that I predicted going through the schedule. Just because what I ended up with for the Chiefs, it didn't sound right. When you say out loud what I ended up with this game being a victory, it didn't sound right. I don't think the Chiefs are going to be able to sweep Oakland in the division here. I think Oakland is making fantastic strides. It's a very talented team. Losing in Oakland would not, especially if this was like week 9 or 10, losing in Oakland would be nothing to be ashamed of this season. I will tell you that several very good teams will be losing in Oakland this year. I think the Chiefs are going to be one of them. Even off of the bye, which breaks in the Chiefs' favor, that's a case where the Chiefs, taking that game in Oakland, that's when you exploit one of those loops in the schedule and make a statement in the division. Ultimately, though, I think Oakland is able to hold on there. The Chiefs drop to 3-2. Next week at home, New Orleans. The Chiefs are currently 8-point favorites. That's the second largest line on the schedule for the Chiefs. The AFC West is playing the NFC South this year, so that's New Orleans, that's Carolina, Tampa Bay, and Atlanta. Of all of those teams, I have the least feel for New Orleans. This 8-point line surprises me. Winning in Kansas City will not surprise me. Chiefs take this one. Now in my schedule, that loss to Oakland and then win against New Orleans sets up an interesting back-and-forth pattern here for Kansas City, because Week 8 is going to Indianapolis. The Chiefs are a 1-point underdog here. We didn't really get to see what the Colts looked like late in the season last year because of Andrew Luck's injury throughout the entire season. That uncertainty and just losing Andrew Luck made the Colts an entirely forgettable team in a terrible, terrible division. I think with Andrew Luck back and with a few new pieces that the Colts are adding, I'm not afraid of the Colts long term. I'm not afraid of them as a whole. But going from a closer game than an 8-point game against New Orleans to Indianapolis, I think the Colts win there. The Chiefs go loss, bye, loss, win, loss. And then next up, another victory against the Jacksonville Jaguars in Kansas City, a 7-point favorite. I also like the direction the Jags are going, but I don't think it's going to be nearly enough to win in Kansas City. Chiefs win there. Then going to Carolina, 4.5-point underdogs. I'm not going to pick any team to win in Carolina other than the Panthers this year. Chiefs take another loss. At this point, then, we're 10 weeks in. The Chiefs have 4 losses. That's a little bit scary because that's also with 1 bye. So we're saying the Chiefs are 5-4. Whenever this happens, because it's clearly going to happen, I'm behind the crystal ball here. Whenever the Chiefs are 5-4 after 10 weeks with a bye in there, don't call in the any talk radio shows about how the team is falling apart, because it's all uphill from here, or all downhill from, you know, I gotta be honest, I don't know which way that expression's supposed to go, because going downhill is easier, but it sounds like going downhill is bad. I'll tell you this, it's smooth sailing from this point forward. After that cutoff, I'll give you another win, Tampa Bay, -7 in Kansas City, not afraid of Jameis Winston. They've got some receivers on that team that are going to really challenge the, I guess, Marcus Peters and whoever else. but ultimately not going to be enough. That defense is not going to hold up against what the Chiefs are going to be bringing offensively. Give the Chiefs another victory. Then at Denver, the Chiefs are 3-point underdogs. I cannot have the Chiefs sweeping the Broncos. I'm not prepared to live with that prediction because I will have my heart broken per usual whenever it comes to beating the Broncos. I'm not terrified of that team. Ultimately, I'll give you where I think the Broncos finish this season, but I do think the Chiefs lose in Denver. Still panicking, still concerned, I'd understand it. 12 weeks in, 5 losses with a bye. You've got 6-5, a 6-5 Kansas City Chiefs team at the end of week 12. That's not going to be at the top of the AFC West. 6-5 is not going to cut it. Really, the 6-5 Chiefs at that point in the season could very well be third in the AFC West. But they are still going to have a firm grasp on their own destiny, to use a phrase that doesn't actually make sense if you think about it, because destiny, you can't be controlled. Regardless, I will move on. The Chiefs are going to be able to ride to the top of the division from that point forward. But it's got to start with the second most difficult game on the schedule to predict. The Chiefs are going to Atlanta in week 13. The Falcons, and maybe I just have a bad feel for the NFC South, although I think it's maybe just half of it. The Falcons have always seemed like a team where you say, well, if things break right, if their defense really gets together, if their offensive line can keep Matt Ryan up, we all know that Julio Jones has one of the highest ceilings in the NFL as far as a receiver goes. The running backs, Tevin Coleman and Devonta Freeman last year, and mostly Freeman, but those guys coming together are going to form a nice duo out of their backfield. That offense scares me at home in Atlanta, but I think the Chiefs do edge that one out, get themselves a 7-5. After that, it's Oakland at home on Thursday Night Football. Currently, this is the Chiefs' only primetime game, which might sound like a slight, but you shouldn't take it as one. One of these late games will likely be flexed into a primetime slot, but I think giving the Chiefs some scheduled consistency is a nice thing. This is the other instance where playing Oakland is in a strange situation. Now, the Chiefs are going to be coming off of a really tight week, coming back from Atlanta in a game that's going to be very, very difficult, but this game happening in week 14 is going to be preceded by the Raiders playing at home, but playing against the Bills, another tough game for them, coming from Oakland to Kansas City on a short week. Being the home team is important, not just because you have the home field primetime advantage that seems to pop up in every bit of analysis before any primetime game, but because of that, just those few days of rest time. Having the Raiders have to travel to Kansas City on a Wednesday at the latest is a huge disadvantage for the traveling team. Also, being at home in a game that's going to matter very, very much. People are going to be saying that this is a must-win game for the Chiefs because the Raiders are going to be pushing for the division also. I think the Chiefs take this game and then take a step up the rankings in the AFC West. Next, they stay home on a long week. They're going to have the Titans at home, currently a 9-point favorite. They're 4.5-point favorites over the Raiders in week 14. Week 15, Tennessee, 9-point favorites. This could be the biggest blowout of the season. Got 10 days to rest up. And playing a team that is going to be, in a best-case scenario, starting to develop with Marcus Mariota. The AFC South is a strange, weak division in my mind, but I don't think the Titans are going to be contending here. Then week 16, things get even more interesting with the Denver Broncos. The Chiefs at this point I have sitting at 9-5. The Denver Broncos are going to be in a very, very similar place here. Another must-win game for the Chiefs. -1.5 at home. This is in the middle of a long winning streak for the Chiefs for me, because giving you a look ahead to week 17, I think the Chiefs win in San Diego. If there's a game in this winning streak that the Chiefs drop, this is the most likely candidate, unless you want to count Atlanta. But this is the most important candidate as well, because any tiebreakers happening in this division, the Chiefs cannot lose to the Broncos 2 times and still take the AFC West. It's not going to happen. The Chiefs might get, or an AFC West team might end up getting a wild card spot, but because I think these teams beat up on each other so much, that is certainly not a guarantee. I think in all likelihood there's a team in a division with two far advanced teams that ends up being able to sweep this bit away, the AFC West bit away. But at the same time, I don't believe in the AFC South, and the AFC East always goes New England's way. Plus, you're going to have 4 games of Jimmy Garoppolo with Tom Brady suspension, which I do think you actually will be serving this year. So that division could all sort of clump together also. AFC West is certainly a contender, no question, to get a wild card team, but won't be getting two for sure, and I think Oakland, Denver, and Kansas City are all going to be fighting for this spot here. Got to win got to win against the Broncos at home. It's not an option. This might be the least optional game on the schedule because at this point, it's crunch time. You can't rebound after this. So then going to San Diego, this is the second place where I think the Chiefs have a really interesting advantage in this division. They might be getting the Chargers at the best two times this whole season. Chargers reeling from last year, just trying to pull the pieces back together, get back on the horse. That's when they start off week one coming to Kansas City. That's an awfully good time. By the end of week 17, I think the Chargers are out of the divisional race, out of the playoff picture. If they're playing young guys for experience, maybe they're banged up, whatever the situation may be, I think the Chargers are out of the playoff chase in week 17. So going to San Diego is going to be very, very doable for the Chiefs. I think they finish the year after that start that's going to cause angry phone calls in the talk radio shows. I think the Chiefs win their last five games at Atlanta, Oakland at home, Tennessee at home, Denver at home, at San Diego, and finish this season 11-5. The places where it's most likely to flip positively or negatively, that game against Denver at home, the game in Atlanta, and all the way back to week six, the positive side, at Oakland, coming off of a bye. If the Chiefs try to have to assert their dominance somewhere in the AFC West, that's going to be the game where it happens early on in the season, and the Chiefs play from ahead in the division. That's where that game's going to have to happen. I don't think it will, but it's certainly within the realm of possibility. Winning in Carolina, not going to happen. Winning in Denver, I'm not crossing my fingers for. Winning in Indianapolis, surely a possibility. Winning in Pittsburgh would be fascinating because they would be 4-0 going into the bye week. Ultimately, I think it's 3-1 going into the bye, ending up at 11-5. Now the question is, with a couple of teams that you've heard me tell you I believe in, I think the Raiders and the Broncos are going to be making hard runs for the top of this AFC West. Is 11-5 going to be enough to win the division? Yep, I think so. Here's why. I have the Oakland Raiders, after going through their schedule one time, at 10-6. The Denver Broncos going through their schedule, 10-6. San Diego Chargers at the end of that, 6-10. Now, here are a couple of flaws in what I've done here already. Places where this is going to fall apart in all likelihood. All six of the Chargers' victories that I came up with are outside of the AFC West. Meaning that I had the Chiefs, Raiders, and Broncos all sweeping the Chargers. That's simply not going to happen. I can acknowledge that right off the top. In fact, this might be what actually decides the AFC West, is what the fourth place team does against the top three teams. Not to beat a terribly, terribly dead horse here, but this is again where the Chiefs have a great advantage with how the schedule panned out. I cannot see the Chiefs losing in week one at home against the Chargers. I cannot see them losing against a team in week 17 at San Diego, a team that's not playing for a playoff spot. So where does this break down then? Why am I so confident that 10-6, 10-6, 6-10 with all of the Chargers' victories coming outside of the division, why am I so confident that breaks down? Looking closer at the Raiders and the Broncos' schedules. In week 6, the Broncos go to San Diego for Thursday Night Football. I've already talked about my thoughts on how that plays out generally for the road teams. The Broncos are going to be playing against the Falcons at home to San Diego. The Broncos, however, are not going to lose at home to San Diego. I don't see that happening. But going to San Diego for Thursday Night Football, that is a prime spot for an upset. It always is. Thursday Night games are ugly. The Chargers are going to have a great chance against the Broncos in that situation. On the Raiders' side, they're going to have the Chargers at home the week after going to Baltimore on a Sunday to Sunday. Not a short week by any means, but playing a difficult physical team in Baltimore, then getting the Chargers at home, that's interesting. I don't think the Raiders have a very high chance of losing at San Diego, even though they will be going off of playing at Kansas City, because they will be going on a long week, because that's what the Raiders have after the Chiefs' Thursday Night Football game. Still, though, back-to-back road games against divisional teams, they have a better chance of losing to the Chargers one time than the Chiefs have either time. Ultimately, those two teams, the Raiders and Broncos, are going to be looking at a ceiling of 11 wins. I think, ultimately, my prediction is at 10, but if you told me that both of those were off by one number, I would pull them both down one victory. And really, that's because of the Chargers. And in that case, if the Chargers do pull off two of those victories, I could see winning in Oakland, or winning at home against Oakland, or winning in Oakland and winning at home against the Broncos. I don't know if that necessarily means that the Chargers actually end up at 8-8. It's plausible, but I think they're going to stumble along the way, regardless of who it's against. But I'm not saying I think about the 9-7 thing for just a moment. saying the Raiders go 9-7 is pretty believable across the board. The Broncos going 9-7 is a little harder for people to swallow. It's a little harder for me to swallow because we just saw this team win the Super Bowl, and their biggest loss were their two quarterbacks, who neither of which played particularly well, kind of ever. Peyton Manning played well enough in the playoffs to get them to the Super Bowl, where he was no good. Brock Osweiler was fine. But I don't have a bit of faith in Mark Sanchez. They've lost key players. We've talked about that over and over. That team, I do think it's 10-6, but I could see the 9-7 thing happening very easily. That's semantics. One thing I want to try to stomp out, though, yes, the Raiders have been bad for a long time. I will not let that keep me from believing in what this roster looks like right now, where this ownership has taken them, what the coaching staff has developed here. They've got a very, very talented young quarterback in Derek Carr with a lot of potential on a cheap contract. This is how the Seahawks were built. And I'm not telling you the Raiders are going to go on a Seahawks dynasty run. But this is how the Seahawks were built. You get a young, talented quarterback, very cheap, second round, third round, Derek Carr, Russell Wilson. Build a big money defense to hold everything down on that side of the ball. Develop your own talent on the offensive side. Went and drafted Amari Cooper. That's a better weapon than Russell Wilson ever had. Put money in that offensive line. You try to keep everything open in the running game. That's how you build a good team. That's how you build a good franchise. If you took the decal off the side of the helmet and put on, if you had the Raiders and the Jaguars switch uniforms, we'd be talking totally differently about those two teams. Everyone's kind of on the Blake Bortles and the Jags building some nice talent and spending wisely. And I can see them kind of, what the Raiders are doing is building a stronger team, a stronger base with a better looking quarterback. Ultimately, a guy who seems to have, I think Derek Carr's ceiling right now is beyond Blake Bortles, and he's performed better up until this point. The defense is packed with talent, and the offensive line is getting stronger and stronger. I know, and especially if you're a Royals fan listening to this, there's the thought of, well, we got to see the team improve it a little bit first before we start saying they're going to make a run. The NFL doesn't always work that way. The reason that I'm able to do off-season shows about the NFL and the Chiefs is because of how often the NFL is flipped on its head. The NBA Finals are going on as I record this. They might be ending tonight. And everyone knew what the final, even the final four teams that were going to be left in the playoffs, we knew who that was going to be. Everybody knew that it was going to be LeBron versus the Warriors in the finals since the season began. Those were the favorites. That was the easy money. And that's what's happening now. And Golden State's going to win it all. The NFL has never been that way. Now, the dominance of Tom Brady and the Patriots is the exception here. And that is an incredible run. However, if you look at division winners, at wild card teams, at teams who make runs and into the playoffs, even championship teams, go back to the Baltimore Ravens. They were successful because Joe Flacco was cheap and developing. They were able to pay elsewhere. Even the early goings of the Steelers with young, cheap Ben Roethlisberger. This might be the most tried and true formula in the NFL. It's very hard to emulate because you have to get your quarterback position right and do it cheaply and young. But if you told me, hey, write up a spreadsheet for the formula to build a successful NFL franchise, what's the most important first piece? You get a young, cheap quarterback, and then you build around him. That's what the Raiders have done and are continually doing. I am very comfortable saying, you know what? I'll roll the dice and say that the Raiders are going in the absolute right direction right now because they're doing what has worked as much as anything in the NFL has worked consistently. This is the formula for it, and the Raiders are doing it. Obviously, they could go 8-8 or 7-9. I don't need to hear that because that's hedging. Even just saying, well, yeah, these guys could go 6-10 or could go 10-6 or 9-7. That is so minute that I even hate that I spent that much time saying that about the Broncos and the Raiders. I don't feel the need to hedge on the Raiders because their process and what they have, the pieces they have now, are all there. Their process has been thorough. This isn't like Dan Snyder trying to throw a bunch of money at big name, big money players and just hoping that things pan out. And if you don't believe me, you can research it yourself, or I will beg of you to hear me out here. This team has been built right. Whenever Derek Carr needs a new contract, it'll start to fall apart. But until that happens, the Raiders have built a team the absolute correct way. I think that's why they are an absolute threat. for the top of the division here, even though, as I just panned out here for you, I think the Chiefs win the division. And I've said that before and been wrong before. I've been wrong about that pretty frequently. But ultimately, I think this is the year where Kansas City takes it back from the Broncos, even with the Raiders right at their heels. Let's talk about Pro Football Focus, I guess, for the second straight week. They did a write-up of ranking the rosters of all 32 teams. This is for ESPN, for Pro Football Focus for ESPN. And the to keep the AFC West thing quickly, they had the Oakland Raiders at number 7, the Denver Broncos at 11, the Chargers at 22, and the Chiefs came in there second in the AFC West at number 9. So here's a bit of it, again, written by Pro Football Focus for ESPN.com, copy and pasted via Arrowhead Pride. Here's what they wrote up about the Chiefs. The Chiefs are another team that has been heading in the right direction for a few seasons now, and they're really only held back by a questionable offensive line, despite the upgraded right tackle with free agent acquisition of Schwartz. Alex Smith might never be an all-pro quarterback, but he can run on offense and win games if surrounded with enough help, and the Chiefs have been adding to a supporting cast each season. Charles, Travis Kelce, and Jeremy Maclin provide three effective weapons, and if any young players take a step forward, the offense will get even better. Houston remains one of the league's best pass rushers when healthy, and quarterback Marcus Peters showed ball-hawking ability as a rookie, 8 interceptions. He will have a lot asked of him in the second season with no Sean Smith on the other side, but this defense has a lot of talent in place. That's all fine and good. That all works. But then also this is brought to my attention on Facebook in the comment section by Austin Wilson, and I'll talk about how to contact the show in a second. But Austin Wilson had this to say. He said, Pro Football Focus said the Chiefs would be a better team if they traded away or replaced 4 particular players, 3 of them being on the O-line, and those 3 were Laurent Duvernay-Tardif, Zach Fulton, and Eric Fisher. I think they have all 3 of those completely wrong. And he goes into some thought on that. First, I guess, sort of a philosophical thing that I want to say. Every player has a price, with zero exceptions. You could even say Aaron Rodgers has a price. If someone offered the Packers 4 straight entire drafts, then it could be worth it. But especially, get out of the realm of franchise quarterbacks. Everybody has a price. So there are several situations where I would agree the Chiefs could get better if they traded Tardif, Fulton, or Eric Fisher. If they traded any of those guys for far better players at those positions, sure they would. But practically, I think that idea totally falls apart from Pro Football Focus. I haven't been able to read the actual article because it's ESPN Insider, and I haven't got my Insider account set up yet. So I'll hopefully be able to clarify anything for next week if any of this is incorrect. But I think it totally falls apart, the idea of what would you trade any of those guys for to get value for. Eric Fisher is the only one of them with any trade value whatsoever that they could bring back anything now. Even then, what would have to happen with Fisher would be to trade him for a lower ceiling, less talented player, cheaper guy with more club control, to use kind of a baseball term. Eric Fisher's contract is on its way out, and he's going to be very expensive to re-sign. Just trying to trade him away before that happens, I understand that line of thinking, but to get talent, to get value back on a talent perspective is not ever going to happen. They're not going to get a guy with even, and you can hate Eric Fisher as much as you want, they're not going to be able to trade Eric Fisher right now with 1 year left on his contract and get a guy anywhere near as good as he is right now. So I think they're going to have to try to get a deal done with him soon, and I hope they do, and I think they just might, and try to lock down the corners of their offensive line, unless they're willing to say, we think Mitchell Schwartz could actually play left side, or I think the best argument for this, if you were going to go away from offensive line talent in payment for Eric Fisher, is you make Ja Reed your left tackle. If you want to move from Eric Fisher to Ja Reed as your left tackle, I don't. I think Ja Reed as a starting guard or as a swing tackle is a perfectly happy place for the Chiefs to be. But having the difference between having Fisher, Schwartz, Reed as the 3 tackles as opposed to Reed, Schwartz, and maybe even Laurent Duvernay-Tardif as your 3 tackles, that is a significant drop-off. It's not just replacing Eric Fisher, it's replacing the 3rd guy also because you're making the 3rd guy a starter. I don't like that. For Zach Fulton and LDT, those guys are really valuable depth pieces at worst. Now, I'm harsher on LDT because I don't see him being very versatile. He was a non-factor at tackle, or I guess being a non-factor would have been an improvement because he was a very poor tackle, and he has a lot of growing to do even to be a guard, technique-wise. I have been on the Zach Fulton bandwagon since the Chiefs drafted him. I thought he would make an impact from his rookie year as a sixth-round pick out of Tennessee. I've been on the Zach Fulton bandwagon. I still am to some extent, especially to the idea of him being the third guard and also backup center as one roster spot. I think that's very, very valuable, that versatility. He played very well at center also whenever Mitch Morse was hurt. So I maybe you could trade Fulton to a team that needed a center very badly as a starting center potentially. But if you look at how NFL teams, especially around draft time, trade actual players in comparison to how they trade draft picks, you're not getting good value. And player for player deals are very rare, and I don't think are ever spurred, you know, by a situation like this where one team just thinks they're fleecing the other team. It's usually a change of scenery kind of deal. So I don't see the Chiefs trading away anyone from this point forward this season, certainly not any of those three offensive linemen. That's very strange to me. And also, if the Chiefs do have the ninth ranked roster in the NFL going forward or throughout next season, I think you should be happy with that. I would be happy with that because I think you expect them to have better coaching than that, giving the Chiefs a chance to be a top five team in 2016. If you want to help support the show or get in contact with the show, this next about 90 seconds are going to be devoted to that. It's the weekly RTK promo section. I'm talking about how you can do it. Patreon.com at patreon.com/RTK. You can give a little bit of money every month to help keep this show rolling forward. These people are doing it and have been doing it for quite a while now. The $20 group, Don Beal at DonBeal32 on Twitter, Andy Simpson, Stephen Smith, and Derek Vaughn at D_Vaughn88. If you are in that $20 group, you have a shout out, your Twitter handle, and any question you have. I don't even care if it's Chiefs related. I will try to make it funny, unless it's just not funny, and then I might ignore it. Any question you have, you can send to me, and I will do my best to answer it on the show. It's a fast track to getting your questions answered. I'll do my best to answer questions from anyone, but that gives you a weekly in if you choose to take it. And the $10 group, Ty Declare at Ty Declare 44. That's the name shout out, Twitter shout out. And the $5 group, Josh Beadle. I never got a Twitter handle, and that's the $10 group, I guess. But I will very, very happily say thank you to anyone entering any of those Patreon slots. It's hugely important to me to know that there are some of you out there willing to pay money on a monthly basis to help support this show, to keep it free forever, to make my time worth it, to be able to help me upgrade on hardware, software. Had been iTunes hosting. I was able to finally cancel the iTunes upgraded hosting I've been needing to pay for all this time because Blog Talk Radio has been joining Blog Talk Radio. They're providing better hosting for free now. So that cost has melted away, which I am extremely thankful for, to Blog Talk Radio. You can get in contact with me on Twitter at JB Briscoe. Send any questions or comments or thoughts about the show to me there. You can follow me on there for all sorts of Chief stuff. I tweet very frequently. On Facebook, at facebook.com/RTK show. It's where Austin Wilson got a hold of me with the Pro Football Focus question. You can send me messages there or in the comments on whenever I post the shows. Also, always try to hit up the comment section on Arrowhead Addict if you don't mind. I think this show is the best whenever there's conversation going on amongst everyone listening to it. And a great place to have that is on the Facebook page, on the comments on Arrowhead Addict. You can also listen to the show on Blog Talk Radio now. Wherever it makes it easiest. The last thing before I move on from this is it's always awesome if you can subscribe to the show on iTunes. These shows are not very well scheduled sometimes, which is 100% my fault. But to make sure you always get it as soon as it comes right out of the oven, you can subscribe to the show on iTunes and leave reviews there. It apparently is super helpful, but I've never really understood why that is. Thank you for listening to me talk about myself. Now let's talk money. Two teams in the AFC West have either just given out a pretty nice contract or about to be giving out a very, very large one. Let's talk about the San Diego Chargers first. This is the smaller deal, something I didn't hear very much about at all, but it is very important. The Chargers finally locked up Keenan Allen. Per Adam Schefter, is a four-year deal worth $11 million per year, a little bit north of that, actually. For comparison, the very, very easy comparison, Jeremy Maclin got 5 years for $55 million with $22.5 guaranteed. So a four-year deal compared to a five-year deal, Jeremy Maclin gets a little bit of the better cut there, but they're very comparable. I think it's interesting to ask yourself, would you rather have Keenan Allen or Jeremy Maclin? Maclin's more proven, has done it for longer, but that's also one of the biggest drawbacks. Keenan Allen was only 24 years old, and Jeremy Maclin is 28. So with that in mind, I think it's a very good question to ask yourself. In fact, I don't know, maybe I'd give the edge because of age to Keenan Allen. Also, only $20 million of his deal is guaranteed. So the Chargers aren't going to be wed to him for more than a couple of seasons if they don't want to be. I think it's a pretty club-friendly deal there. It's a nice move for the Chargers. Now, the more tumultuous deal is happening in Denver. And boy, it has gone, it seems to have gone very, very wrong with Von Miller. I can't remember who it was. I think it was DeMarcus Ware posted a picture of himself, Von Miller, John Elway, Gary Kubiak, and someone else was in the picture as well. Can't remember. Doesn't really matter. At the White House, after meeting President Obama and going through whatever, you know, championship teams do at the White House. And Von Miller shared the exact same photo, just I don't know what it's called, regramming it. I think you regrammed it. I'm only 21, but apparently I'm 47 when it comes to Instagram terms. He did a retweet of an Instagram, but cropped John Elway out of the picture, and it's because of the contract situation with Von Miller. The Broncos offered him a $144.5 million deal over 6 years, which sounds pretty good right off the dome there. In reality, it is, as Yahoo Sports puts it, is far less committed than it sounds. In reality, the contract can be dumped after only 2 seasons, meaning the Broncos have offered Miller what amounts to be a 2-year deal with $38.5 million guaranteed. Another $1.3 million in unguaranteed money is earnable between those 2 seasons via workout bonus. After that, the rest of the deal can be shed at any point. Justin Houston's contract was $52.5 million guaranteed, which blows Von Miller's out of the water. And it was 6 years, $101 million for Justin Houston. So 6 years, $114 million, sounds like a better deal, but in the NFL, it's all about the guaranteed money. That is by far the most important thing. Also happening right now that's going to be spiking prices even higher, this broke today on the 13th. It happened over in Philadelphia. Adam Schefter reported that Eagles and Fletcher Cox agreed to a 6-year, $103 million extension that includes a $63 million guarantee. That is the highest guarantee for a non-quarterback in NFL history. Von Miller should take that Fletcher Cox contract to John Elway's office and nail it on his door like Martin Luther's 95 Theses, because that is a meal ticket for Von Miller. Fletcher Cox is a defensive lineman getting paid to get to the quarterback, which is what Von Miller's job is also. The positions are different. It doesn't really matter. This is what Von Miller is going to be looking at now. Justin Houston's contract is comparable. $52 million guaranteed. I would be shocked, really, truly shocked, to see Von Miller sign a deal with less than $50 million guaranteed. Now Fletcher Cox's deal has bumped it to a $60 million guarantee as a reasonable number. And also, the years and money here, what Justin Houston did, I'm telling you, this is what really matters. Justin Houston took just over $100 million for $52 guaranteed. Fletcher Cox took just over $100 million for $63 guaranteed. Von Miller is not going to take only $114 for simply $38.5 million guaranteed. That's not going to happen. And it was this kind of mess that ended up having Josh Norman be booted from Carolina because they could not work out a contract, so Carolina unfranchised him and simply let him walk, and they're using their cap money elsewhere. I didn't love that move for Carolina, not one bit. I would have had him play out his franchise year for sure, trying to make another run at the Super Bowl. I don't see the Broncos letting Von Miller, unfranchising Von Miller. That is simply not going to happen. I would be absolutely blown away. But it's starting to make it seem like they might have a harder time re-signing him than we were expecting originally. Ultimately, I do think they get a long-term deal done, and this ends up being a whole lot of posturing. But ultimately, this is becoming, the longer this story is a story, the better of a chance there is that he ultimately walks. Now, on the Chiefs side of things, I didn't even tease this because I forgot about it. Eric Berry is still in a pretty similar spot. We're just not hearing anything about the contract negotiations. We're hearing a lot from Von Miller, from John Elway, and seeing a lot on Instagram and whatever about the issues within this contract. Eric Berry cannot look to Fletcher Cox for comparisons, but there have been a couple other safety contracts lately that have popped out of the dirt that he's going to be pointing at. The only news with Eric Berry's deal, though, which for better or for worse, is that there is no news. I know I've beaten into the ground for a long time that I would have franchised Sean Smith and not Eric Berry. That is well documented on this show. And then obviously we'll never know how that would have planned out. But a little bit of chaos in Denver. quarterback discussion last week, a little bit of a mess there, a little bit of a mess with Von Miller. That's always great to have tables being flipped over in the Broncos front office. But they won the Super Bowl last year, so frankly, they should get the benefit of the doubt for a little while. That's a wrap for this episode of the Roughing the Kicker Chiefs podcast on Blog Talk Radio on ArrowheadAddict.com. I'm your host, Joshua Briscoe. Subscribe to the show. Follow me on Twitter. All the stuff I said about whatever it was 10 minutes ago. Hope you enjoyed this episode. I hope you learned a lot about how the schedule pans out and why that's going to give the Chiefs a division title, how they can exploit that schedule at the very least to get there. Why I believe in the Oakland Raiders, what's going on with Pro Football Focus's rankings, and how they continually have the Chiefs slotted just behind Oakland, which I think is a totally reasonable thing to argue, though I think ultimately the Raiders will fall just short because the Chiefs are surging! It's finally time! The Broncos are sliding out of their throne. Von Miller is asking for more money than they want to give him. Clearly now is the time for reckless optimism. Which is better to do it now than when games are actually being played and they're losing games and that's what they're going to win and everything begins to fall apart slowly. Stay optimistic, everybody. Bye, Mom!